हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So seven, constituents of inference, five avyayas. The term avyaya literally means constituents or parts. And in this context, it refers to the constituents of inference. This is an important topic in Nyaya philosophy because Nyaya strongly emphasizes describing the minute complexities of the pramanas, the sources of methods of receiving correct knowledge. Among these methods, inference is the most important source of correct knowledge. And Nyaya therefore provides a technical method to test the validity of inference. When inference contains five necessary constituents, then it can give correct knowledge. These five requisite components of inference are pratigya, statements, hetu, reason, udarahana, example, upanaya, universal proposition, and nigamana, conclusion, footnote. The Upanishads are scriptures accepted as the Vedas or Shrutis. They are not only the Vedas, but considered as the acme of Vedic literature. The rational version of the Upanishads are philosophical in comparison with the adorative songs of Samhitas towards a pantheon of Vedic gods. Though the various Upanishadic mantras of apparently conflicting features, they are reconciled by the aphorisms of Sri Vyasa in his Uttara Mimamsa philosophy under different systematic logical categories known as nyayas or adhikaranas. Each theme of an adhikarana has been fully dealt with by panchanga or fivefold positions of logical system to meet all opposing controversies. The aphorisms have met with all polemic views of different philosophical systems, which prove to go against the truth of the Shrutis. And again, the aphorisms are supported by the Upanishad mantras, followed by smritis and reasons offered in favor of the citatory passages termed as bhashyas, and their commentaries by erudite savants. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the Veda, its morphology and ontology. Right, so the Upanishads then, they give the philosophical presentation. And then this philosophical presentation, he says, is then is according to nyayas, or according to the adhikarana. Right? In other words, the nyaya is this panchanga nyaya. So an adhikarana is where a panchanga nyaya is being applied. So there's a point being made, and then it will go through all these five stages to prove the point. Then it'll go on to the next adhikarana. So then... But it's just sutras one after another, but they're grouped into the adhikaranas. So then one adhikarana will have one point. That'll be the what it'll deal with. And then the next adhikarana will have another point. So then however many sutras it takes to establish, you know, the principle, its explanation, its examples, its, synthesizing or bringing in the universal element, and then again the conclusion. So all of them will do that. So it's a very common method. Also, your suts and darbans, they work on the same thing. It's adhikarana. So what's being pointed out here, this one says in general this, but there's here it is. There's another quote. No subject matter can be confidentially accepted unless it passes through the five processes of logical or rational departments. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Sri Chaitanya's teachings. And then there's a purport where Prabhupada also brings out that if it's not according to these five, as stated by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it's not actually an accepted, as authority, as praman. Mm-hmm. Like that. So it's just the standard way of presentation. So the Vedanta Sutra, it's doing it in this style. That's where we see it. Right? So Nyaya is documented, Gotama is documented how Nyaya works. Right? So given great fine detail, the Vedanta Sutra is where it's properly applied. Because right? There it's applied in supporting the presenting Vedanta philosophy. But he takes it and defines it, and it's its own philosophy. So as its own philosophy, that we don't, that's not so important. But as a system of presentation, then it's very important. So presentation of Nyaya will always be through this, the constituents of inference. It'll always be presented through that. So you want to make sure that it's based on authority. It's something that can properly be perceived through the senses. That's why you're giving examples, so that the person you're explaining it to can perceive it through the senses. Right? And then what you're discussing are the pramayas. Right? So for us, these are then categorized according to Dasa Mool. That's a better method. And so then in that, you want to deal with doubt, you want to show what your goal is, you're giving examples anyway in that process, you're giving conclusions, right? Like that. So all these different elements are being used. Yes.
Modern scientific ways of presentation never follow that?
They generally have thesis, antithesis, and then synthesis. So they're basically, their thesis includes their reasoning, right? And then the antithesis would include what may be against this and their reasons and why. And that. So their reasons, their examples, the doubts, those are all kind of put together as one thing. So it's not quite as broken up as scientifically, like that. And then in their synthesis, then they're bringing it around, and because you brought it together, now you're saying your conclusion again. So they'll have their conclusion. But it's not like, because conclusion isn't it's not so prominent, it's just kind of just, it brings it back to their thesis. Does that make sense? So it's they're using the same thing. If they don't use that, then it won't actually be very scientific or logical like that. So logic has to work in this way. But if you're not using the Vedic, then the tendencies will come up being not so scientific. That's all. It'll have its own culture, but it's not that elements will be left out. Like let's say in a formal setting for a meal, right, it's gotten very sophisticated. You may have at least three forks, if not more, and all the different things like that, all over the place. And then but the difficulty comes is that that's so sophisticated, and the plays of this, and what kind of glass is this, and what kind of glass is that, all those kind of things. But the difficulty comes up is that the actual standard of cleanliness, of purity, is not there. It should look clean. Nothing should be gross. All these things. So all those are very, that's culture. That's etiquette. That's sophistication. But the difficulty is that it becomes so complicated when you can do most of that with your fingers anyway, And but actual purity isn't part of the thing. They don't catch that. So they overemphasize one thing and then completely left out something else. So that would be the difficulty when you're using the non-Vedic logic. As much of the time it gets a bit too sophisticated and complicated, but in areas that it doesn't need to, in areas where it should, it doesn't. Does that make sense? Okay.
So you explained, I think, there's a good that this system, this is a Gotama system.
He's the one that's presented it as a philosophy. So Nyaya is always there. It's one of the 14 books of Vedic knowledge. But he's the one that documents it, gives it that fine you know, fineness to it, but the problem is he also uses it as a philosophy.
Yes. But you, I think we are mentioning that there are two main systems of Pancha.
No. There's only one system. I'm saying there's two. We come across two systems of definition of the terms.
Yes.
The terms of these five means you have the five constituents, right? So here he's using pratigya, hetu, udaharana, upanaya, and nigamana. So Vyas, when he uses different terms. So then some may get confused that it's some different system, because what he uses here is hetu, is reason, but in Vyasadeva will put doubt. But the point is that he is means. This is very nice, you're just presenting it and then showing, but possibly, like Prabhupada is going through and say, some may say.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you're throwing up the doubt yourself, therefore you're giving examples and all those things. In other words, you'll incorporate, it means in regular presentation, we'll incorporate an udarahana, the example. That's where we'll put our doubts.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is Vyasadeva is then, because of Vedanta Sutra, is then presenting it as defeating all these other philosophies, right?
Yes.
So then the point is you say your thesis, you know, no one can complain, really.
Mm-hmm.
If I say there's fire on the mountain,
mm-hmm.
Can you argue with that? You don't know what mountain, you don't know this and that. So, but why are you saying that? Because there's smoke.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? If there's fire on the mountain, why? I saw a hippopotamus. It's kind of like, well, what has that got to do with anything? You know, so when you say your reason, that's when doubt comes up.
Yes.
So therefore, reason and doubt are the same position.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then because the doubt comes up at that point, then they're going to present their thesis.
Yes.
Right? So then you're going to deal with their thesis in your examples.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So then example and their thesis end up in the same place. Or they don't bother with dividing into thesis and reason. It's just their doubt, you know, and their reason for their doubt. So then it's your reason and it's also their reason. But it brings up all those. So doubt's included.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you end up with these different terminologies there. You know, here you're giving universal proposition, but that means you've absorbed the other philosophy, because if yours is universal, it includes theirs. So the element of synthesis is automatically done, but you're not putting the emphasis on synthesis. That's coming in when Vyasadeva is present. But it's the same thing, you know, just like we say car or automobile, it's the same thing. Yeah. And rolling it. And then you see. You say, we need one more. Okay, hypothetical argument. Tarka 8. All systems of Indian philosophy agree that it is simply the mind's jabbering that creates confusion and misunderstanding within and without. Because the mind is clouded by its own modifications, it is very important to wash out these confusions before attempting to understand something solely through the mind. Right? Because the mind, what it's doing is accepting and rejecting. So it has a formula by which it decides whether something should be accepted. And I was just trying to put accepted and rejected together. Ejected.
Ejected.
Maybe that's an ejected. Or what would be the... How would you put the other one?
Accepted.
No, that's accepted and rejected.
Ejected.
Huh?
Recepted.
Recepted, yes. Ejected or recepted. Yes. Okay, so... Therefore, it says it's clouded by its own modifications. Those are the modifications. You know, if sense gratification is there, then the modifications it's making on the intelligent, presentation that's there, the options that are presented by the mind. In other words, the logic that comes in, then the mind modifies that according to what its desire is. Right? And then you enter. So that's the problem. It's clouded by it. So that's why it's very, one has to be very careful to see that that's not what's happening in logic. The whole idea of logic is to see that the mind doesn't cloud it. Mm-hmm. Right? It means you can get done what you want to get done, but you have to do it without allowing there any confusion. For this purpose, Nyaya philosophy discusses the possible problems of the mind and clarifies its confusions, using such process as tarka. Tarka is the process of questioning and cross-questioning that leads to a particular conclusion. Right? So like what we see is what Chudamani is using with Vaishnav Das, that's tarka. It means he's put his point, and then he's put his doubt. Okay, now that's just come. That's just in your, you're going in your avyayas, right? Your panchalakshan is there. But then when he makes his point, then you're bringing up something, cross-examining that. Okay, you said this, but then you left this out, or what about that? And then you keep going. That's tarka, to make sure that there's nothing left out, nothing's not dealt with properly, everything's very clear. Like that. Does that make sense? You missed the political fasting this morning.
Political fasting?
Yeah, we weren't here for that. I mean, you got in the kneecapping the other day, but you missed the political fast.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I'll check that.
Yeah, okay. Tarka is the process of questioning and cross-questioning what leads to a particular conclusion. In other words, they're trying to get to a conclusion, but you're trying to get to a conclusion. So you keep questioning so that it brings it closer to your conclusion and defeats theirs. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Last time we said that tarka is that you're expert in arguing.
So yes.
You don't try to find the truth.
Means you're trying to come. It says here you're trying to come. Leads to a particular conclusion. Now it's supposed to be your conclusion is siddhanta, but it's not necessarily. If your siddhanta isn't siddhanta, then it's not going to be. Right. So therefore, you're going to just be arguing. So. You can, let us say that even in the argument, you figure out that you don't have a good argument. Okay? Now, if it's, you know, if that humility is there, then you might be able to acknowledge that. You know? Or acknowledge it but show how you weren't so wrong in your position. Right? But there's also the possibility that you see that you can't win the argument, you know, because he has a better argument. But either due to pride that you don't want to lose anyway, or because you see he just has a better argument, so you feel I wasn't prepared. But you still feel your conclusion is still superior. Does that make sense? And then because of that, then you might see a way that there's a weakness in how he's presenting his philosophy. Does that make sense? So you see a way that by making your presentation, you can actually defeat what he's saying. Does that make sense? But it doesn't mean, so you've won the argument, but you haven't actually come to a conclusion. You know, of actual siddhanta, of any value. Does that make sense?
Can we compare it like Madhyamadhikari? One of his characteristics that he may be not as expert in all the shastras and somebody who is more expert at tarka, maybe. They could be defeated.
Yes.
He doesn't have to accept the...
No, but what I'm meaning, I'm talking about the person who's working just on argument. Because the devotee would be trying to establish actual correct understanding. But the other person may not be. He just has his own mundane concept. So he may be good at, he's found something, either, you know, his technique or something that he wins because just his argument. He knows how to ask questions that you don't know how to answer. You know what I'm saying? It's very standard. You see a lot of people use it. Journalists, that's like their bread and butter. You know what I'm saying? It means it's like, means, you know, butter's kind of yellow. That's what gives their journalism. You know, it has to be. They have to ask. You're doing something here, and you're, you know, it's like everything's very nice and all that. And so, So, you know, instead of going, you know, oh, this is a nice place, what is it for, what's your purpose? It's, oh, so, it's, you know, it's very beautiful here, so you guys just delight to live nicely. You know, that's how they'll start out. You know, the complete, you know, it's unlimited terminologies, but we won't use any. They're just, they're actually, it means on one level, just very, very terrible people, because they just have, they just want to create something that they can bring out what is going to be topical and what's in the news. That's all. Because, you know, say, they'll say whatever it is for truth, but actually it's all about making money. Because if he writes something that's truthful and that people aren't going to want to read, his editor throws it out, won't accept it. So it's nothing to do with truth. It's about what people want to hear. So they'll talk about, no, you have to give the truth. That's just, that's how they condone their method of making money. Just like in the marriage ceremony, they use a different terminology, but they're selling their daughter. But they use a different terminology, so it sounds nice. So the same way, it sounds like it's truth, but they don't do that. Does that make sense? Lawyers do the same thing also. They may not have a case. They know their guy's guilty, but they know which way to argue it so that the other guy doesn't have an answer. You know, he knows where the weakness is in his case, so he just hits that. Does that make sense? So you have so many examples where people use this tarka. That's why I said hypothetical. It's not actually real. But the point is, it's a valid method, is that you keep asking questions, but it should lead to actual siddhanta, you know, truth about Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, is that you're trying to see that the mind is not clouded by it, but the problem is that the person whose mind is clouded is going to use it for his own conclusion. But its actual purpose of using it is to remove those things. You know, so you're supposed to, why are we looking at it this way? Why? They don't look at that. It's a matter of why, you know, how that the other, it's all about the other person. You know what I'm saying? But it should be, it's, you're discussing it to come to a conclusion so that both parties understand. Does that make sense? Okay. It's a form of supposition that can be used as an aid to the attainment of valid knowledge. Tarka can become a great instrument for analyzing a common statement and for discriminating valid knowledge from invalid knowledge. Right? It's just like you could say, you know, small children use it all the time. You know, eat your vegetables. Why? They're good for you. Why? You know, just they keep asking why until, you know, you either, how you say? Yeah. Yeah. Until they win, but at the same time they lose. Or they're winning, how you say? They're winning, yeah, means manifests as them losing. So therefore it can be a great instrument, but it can also be used badly. So that's the point, is anything could be used properly or bad. The more exact it is, the more it can be misused. So that's the problem. It's like leadership can do great things, it can also create problems. Right? So because people think it creates problems, they think get rid of leadership, get rid of problems. You know, but then, you know, how many people have cut themselves? Get rid of all knives, and they solve so many problems. Accidents in cars, you get rid of all the cars. Like that, you know. So many things you can get rid of. Nobody has any problem. Right? I wonder what you'd have left if you got rid of everything that created a problem. Right? Probably not much. Conclusion, Nirnaya. It is a certain knowledge that is attained by using legitimate means. If the mind has doubts concerning the correctness or validity of a conclusion it has drawn, then employing the process of tarka, hypothetical argument, can help to resolve those doubts. But it's not always necessary for a conclusion to pass through a doubtful state. It may be indubitably perceived. Indubitably. Either through direct perception, inference, testimony, or intuition. Nirnaya is the ascertainment of assured truth about something that is attained by means of recognizing legitimate sources of knowledge. So it should be, you know, correct. Does that make sense? So you can get to that from there. Where is... Discussion, Badha. Discussion is kind of debate between two parties, the exponent and the opponent, on a particular subject. Each party tries to establish its own position and to refute that of the other, arguing against any theory propounded by the other. Both, however, are trying to arrive at the truth by applying the methods of reasoning and logic. This is an effective and efficient way to reach valid knowledge if both parties are honest and free from prejudices. Right? So it works very nicely if it's there. If it's not, yeah. Wrangling, jalpa. Jalpa wrangling is the process by which the exponent and the opponent both try to attain victory over the other without making an honest attempt to come to the truth. There is an involvement of ego instead of search for knowledge. Jalpa contains all the characteristics of valid debate, except that of aiming to discover truth. It is that type of discussion in which each party has a prejudice for his own view and thus tries to gather all possible arguments in his own favor. Lawyers sometimes apply this method to win their cases in court.
It's jalpa.
Jalpa. It's just wrangling. Just means you just say anything. If it'll win your argument, that's what you do. Irrational reasoning. Vidanda, vitanta. It is argumentation that is aimed exclusively at refuting or destroying an antagonist's position, and it is not at all concerned with establishing or defending one's own position. So this is another, is that you use it to win, that you'll say anything. This one is not, you worry about winning, you worry about destroying the other person. Like that. It is mere destructive criticism of the views of one's opponent. Whereas in wrangling, both the exponent and opponent try to establish their own position. In irrational reasoning, either or both parties tries to refute the other's position instead of establishing his own. This usually occurs when one or both parties realize that his own case is weak, that he cannot defend his point of view. Consequently, he irrationally attacks the other's case with destructive intent. So in other words, you might use then the question of what questions you use of that, but you may just directly attack it. Yeah, no, I'm saying that's very common. That means before it was, as I remember, in ads or anything you're trying to sell, you're trying to establish how it's good. And then it started to become a thing, which I think now is pretty standard, is that you don't worry about establishing that you're good, you establish that the opponent is bad. Yes. So, I mean, then the conclusion, of course, is automatically, therefore, you're good. Yes. You know?
In the two-party state, yeah.
Yeah, but then you also have the saying, it takes one to know one. So then that kind of refutes their position. So... But I've seen this happen a lot in big meetings and all that, big management meetings. Someone will start, instead of they have a point of position, then someone then presents something against, and then all they're doing is fighting with each other how their position, each the other's position is bad, rather than sticking to, is this good or how to discover if it's good or not. Because the person just said it's not good. Well, how do you know? Take it through the logical process. You know, question and find out, and then if you think it is wrong, then take it in that direction. So,
it's very common in political debate.
Yes, they do that a lot. That's where I've seen it used the most. This is whenever you have some kind of management, group, then they use this one a lot, or this jalpa.
Yes.
I mean, these are really. Okay. Specious reasoning. Hetabhasa. It is reasoning that appears to be valid but is really unfounded. This specious reasoning is a fallacy or inference, and is therefore discussed later in this chapter in the section on inference. unfair reply. Designates a statement that is meant to cheat or fool someone. In unfair reply, one takes a word or phrase that has been used in a particular sense, pretends to understand it in that sense, pretends to understand it in a sense other than that which was intended, and then denies the truth of this deliberate misinterpretation of the original speaker's words. For example, someone's name is Bizarre, and in referring to this person, someone says, "He is bizarre." The listener knowingly misconstrues the statement and replies, "He is not bizarre, he's just a common, ordinary human." Then the person is using chala. Right? Krishna, when he's joking with the devotees, uses chala a lot. You know, so for joking, chala is fun. But in argument, it's not supposed to be used. Generality. Based on a false analogy, jati. And that was, generality, okay. Jati means generality, but as used here, it is a technical term used to describe a debate in which an unfair reply or conclusion is based on a false analogy. Suppose, for example, that someone is arguing that sound is not eternal because it is an effect of a certain cause, just as a pot is produced from clay. But another argues that sound must be eternal because it is non-material, like the sky. This counter-argument of trying to prove the eternality of sound by comparing it with the non-material sky is fallacious, because there is not necessarily a universal relationship between the non-material and the eternal. Right, so here, non-material means it's not a specific manifestation of, how you say, an element. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say you have a cave. That's a specific manifestation of ether. Right? And then you just have ether. So you could say, in this kind of case, that the material manifestation of ether is the cave. The non-material is the sky. I mean, just the, you know, space. Does that make sense? Right? You know, or like a brick is a material manifestation of earth, and then there's just earth in general.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? Because there's the element earth. Mm-hmm. Then it has a manifestation as a brick or a hill or, you know, something.
Yes.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. So this is they're confusing those. In the Nyaya system itself, sound is considered to be a non-eternal quality because it is produced and can be destroyed. Some other systems, however, do not agree with this view. Right, because they're working on sound, because then you have the Veda, it's sound, so it's aparusheya, so it's eternal. So therefore, sound is eternal, so you have the Nag Brahman. Right, it means the Brahman, it means sound is Brahman. So that from there, then you have specific manifestations of sound that may be temporally manifest, but the position of sound is eternal. Does that make sense? So they get into these kind of, you know, could, you know, spend a lot more valuable, you know, time than this. But grounds for defeat, nigrahastana. Nigrahastana may be translated as the grounds on which a person is defeated in his argument. When a proponent misunderstands his own or his opponent's premises and their implications, then he becomes helpless and must eventually admit his defeat in the debate. The point at which he accepts his defeat is called nigrahastana. Mm-hmm. Right, so then that could be done by proper questioning and proper going through the logic, right? Or it could be by improperly using, you know, by using a generality or using jalpa or using any of these kind of things. Or is that irrational? Vidanda? You know, hate about any of these kind of things. You could defeat the other person. So the actual defeating them, that's nigrahastana. Mm-hmm. When they accept that defeat, that's nigrahastana.
So now in the last four or five points, the false ego is quite involved.
Well, that's what it's not supposed to be. That's why it's saying what's proper and what's not proper. So even if it's not proper, it doesn't mean that it's not mentioned, because that can come up. You know, it's just like Manu gives eight kinds of marriages. Those are the only ways that you can combine, you know, and produce a marriage. But the point is that half of them are recommended, half of them aren't. But if you don't know what they all are, how do you know what to avoid? So you should know what you should do, what you shouldn't do. Then it's a complete understanding. Right? So in here, then, what is the proper and what's the improper? Because some of these things are automatically improper, and some of them could be used properly or improperly. Right? Does that make sense? But these are all the elements that would be used. So there's these, what is it, 16. So these 16 elements, then that's all there is within logic. Right? It means it covers huge areas. We can see each one of them goes down into something, and then that one becomes split into two, and then of that, then there's three of these, and like that. Abhideya. To attain the state of liberation, one has to acquire true knowledge of the soul and of all the objects of experience. Right? Means, and that objects of experience means it has to be enough that you figure that there's nothing else left. I hope. Right? Means there's nothing else that you would worry about. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, in other words, if it's something you're not worried about, you know, like, you know, where do tsetse flies live, and you know, are they doing all right? You know, they're having, you know, civil wars, and is the tsetse fly population being affected by this? So if that's not, you don't worry about it. So those areas that are valuable to you, that's what you're going to do. So therefore, you should have true knowledge of concerning those. Right? So you should know the soul, and you should know the areas of your conditioning, you know, and what actually is the essential points of them, how they function. Because we're conditioned, we're in the state of conditioning because of our particular interest in particular areas that are non-spiritual. So we should understand them and their reality, and then what's the actual nature of spiritual. So this can tell the difference, but it can't really tell you why there should be. So that's why it's more important about the nitya and naimitta kriyas, you know, that are being explained, you know, by Vaishnava Das. Right? Yes? No? Kind of? Okay. This knowledge is called tattvajnana, which means to know reality as completely distinct from unreality. Footnote 4. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Right? For yourself, that's one thing, but for all, then that's the highest welfare. Srimad Bhagavatam 112. Nyaya philosophy prescribes a three-stage path for reaching the goal of liberating knowledge. The first step is shravana, the study of the scriptures. One has to study the spiritual scriptures and listen to authoritative persons and saints. Following this, one must use his own reasoning powers to ponder over what he has learned. This process of rumination is called manana. Finally, one must contemplate on the soul, confirming his knowledge, and practice that truth in his life. This is called nididhyasana. Through the practice of shravana, manana, and nididhyasana, a person realizes the true nature of the soul as being totally distinct from the body, mind, senses, and all other objects of this world. The truth realized within dispels the darkness of self-identification and misunderstanding, mithya-jnana, concerning I-ness and thy-ness. Then, when this happens, a person ceases to be moved by his passions and impulses and begins to perform his duties selflessly without having any desire to reap the fruits of these actions. The fire of true knowledge roasts one past karma like seeds, thereby making them unable to germinate. Thus, true knowledge leads a person to the state where there is no cycle of birth and death. This state is called liberation. Right? This is Upanishad. So he's taking from the Veda here. That the Shravana Manana Nididhyasana, that's a standard process, is that you hear the knowledge, you contemplate it, you apply it. Right? Yes.
When it comes within the nine courses of devotion,
I mean, Shravana basically is definitely the first one.
No, because I hear sometimes it's Manana is inside, like between Shravana and Kirtan, you want to, so you think about what you hear.
Yes, it means you have to think about it, and then you have to practice it. You've heard that you should serve Vaishnavas, so therefore you perform Padasevana. Or you heard that you should worship the deity, so then you perform Archana. You know, you've heard that you should surrender to the Lord, so then Atmani Vedana.
So, they
interrelated? It means this is the process for applying what you've heard. And Shravana means that nine processes are your application. That's Abhidhaya. So you've heard about them before, the nine processes. You've contemplated what's the benefit, and then you're practicing that. Does that make sense? So when you practice it, then it would be those nine. But then before that, you've already heard about them. So that's Shravana. So even the others, you can only know that they exist through Shravana. So that's why Shravana is the most important. Because otherwise, without Shravana, how do you know that the other eight are there? Right? But for you to hear means somebody else has to be doing kirtan.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's why Shravan of kirtan is the most important. But the point is you're hearing somebody speaking, you're hearing, but the whole point is that it should be for remembering Krishna, being absorbed in Krishna. So that's why these three are brought out, because that's the actual hearing proper things in the association of devotees with the idea to exclusively please Krishna. That's what you're trying to obtain. So those become the problem.
As far as the fire of true knowledge roasts one's past karma like seeds, thereby making them unable to germinate?
It's true, but it won't come by this process. Only bhakti can do that. That's the thing that's unique, because these others, if they're talking about this state, is called liberation. So it may appear to roast the seeds, but means just saying hypothetically, you're getting down to roasting the seeds of specific enjoyment. But the seed of I want to be the controller and enjoyer, that they never address at all. It's not even a topic to bring up. Because their whole point, why do they want liberation? So they can enjoy. So that means you have to be able to control the material nature to get there. Does that make sense? So that point, nobody ever addresses it. So that's why they always stay in the material world, because the consciousness is polluted. So you're trying to develop the unpolluted consciousness. Does that make sense?
That's the fire, is that unbelievable?
Yeah. Means here they're doing it on a smaller position. Very specific, okay, you know that I'm attached to this particular kind of situation or this particular activity or this particular experience. I might be able to seemingly get rid of that. But if you don't get rid of the I want to control and enjoy, it's just a matter of time before you get around to that again, because it's just one of the options of the modes of nature. You know, why is it that certain things are so widespread? Because, you know, that's just one of the ways of expressing the modes of nature get around to that. But it's only, but you could also say it's correct because the fire of true knowledge, but what's true knowledge? That's what it's meaning by Tarka, as you inquire. Okay. You know, what does it mean by fire? What does it mean by true knowledge? You know, what do you mean by roast? What do you mean by You know what I'm saying? All these different things, because they're saying this because the fire of true knowledge means fire. If you roast seeds on fire, they won't sprout. So that's a fact. But so now you're taking that and giving it, connecting it to this, but does it actually connect to this, right? Because if it doesn't, that's the specious reasoning. You know, it doesn't actually. It's not really connecting, because the fire of knowledge, it means, of course, is going to uproot attachment, but it won't get rid of the principle on which attachment is based. Right? And so, because you know this thing, once you pull out of it, but when if you don't uproot the desire to enjoy, you'll come back to enjoying again. So where are you going to go back to? You go back to where you were before, because that's what you're familiar with. You know what I'm saying? It's not that from here you go off something to something else. Does that make sense? Nyaya asserts that obtaining valid knowledge of the external... So here, true knowledge means knowledge about Krishna. Right? Knowledge about, you know, Krishna in devotion, learned from pure, you know, practitioners. Then you can say, yes, the fire of true knowledge, or the proper devotional knowledge, roasts one's past karma like seeds. It's true. And therefore, at least, where there's no cycle of birth and death. So we'll agree with that. The point is the difficulty is, you know, this point of true knowledge. Like that. So what they're saying, what he's saying is true knowledge means that this knowledge is gained without the mind getting in the way of it with prejudices, right? Just what is there given in the Shastra, what's dealt with nicely. So they're doing it up to a point, which is a very major point, more than most are doing. But ultimately, the idea that liberation is going to actually solve your problem and get rid of the anxiety of the material world, that is a mental concoction. Right? But, you know, it's all anything else other than that has been removed in the process. So there's no obstacles by the emotions and attachments and all these other things. That's all I've been dealing with. But this final thing of be the controller and enjoyer, that remains. So therefore, it's still going to come out wrong. Right? So that one thing. So that's why then in Vedanta, it goes a step further and removes the polluted consciousness, by proving what the soul actually is, servant of God. It's not enough to say the soul's not part of the material world. That's only the first stage. Because he's in the material world because he thinks he's the controller and enjoyer. So when he understands he's not the controller and enjoyer, he's servant of the Lord, then that puts him where he should be in the spiritual world. Does that work? Okay. Nyaya asserts that obtaining valid knowledge of the external world and its relationship with the mind and self is the only way to obtain liberation. Yeah, it's the only. If one masters the logical techniques of reasoning and assiduously applies these in his daily life, he will rid himself of all suffering. Thus, the methods and conditions of determining true knowledge are not the final goal of Nyaya philosophy. Right? So that's why he's saying true knowledge is there, but it's not like they're trying to obtain true knowledge. True knowledge is used as a method to remove the conditioning. So that liberation is the thing. Right? Logical criticism viewed only as an instrument that enables one to discriminate valid from invalid knowledge. Thus, Nyaya is a philosophy of life, even though it is mainly concerned with the study of logic and epistemology. Okay, then footnote 5. Just a small little footnote.
Nyaya is a philosophy of life. Is that because your philosophy determines your attitude, the way you do things?
Yes, but I would say it's because of this element of manana nididhyasanas that you're going to apply it into your life. So everything that you're doing, you're going to analyze, is this correct and why you're doing it and everything like that, and how you're actually separate from that, and what's the material and what's the spiritual, and like all those things. So it becomes like that, a way of life. But the difficulty is that it becomes a way of life, but their goal is liberation. So valid knowledge is not something that has to continue. It's just a technique that you use. Right? You know, so for the devotees, that knowledge of Krishna, that's something that remains. You know what I'm saying? Only in relationship, in rasa, then there may be the element where you're not so worried about Krishna being God or those kind of things, because then that relationship can be cultivated. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. So the ultimate goal also is not knowledge, but is how to please Krishna. Right? But it's not that the knowledge is given up or rejected, it's just that it's not important. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you've cooked dinner, you've, you know, already eaten, cleaned up the kitchen, put everything away. You know, now you sit in the living room. It's not that you've rejected the kitchen, it's just not necessary. Like that. So if need be, you can deal with it. So then anyone in the spiritual world, even though knowledge is not why they're serving the Lord, but if they need to use it, then they have so much knowledge. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Without correct sambandha, it's impossible to get the correct vidya and prayojana.
Yes, yes. It means it's always because the your quality of, it means abhidhaya and prayojana, the quality of them depend on the quality of the sambandha, your knowledge. Like that. So if we understand Krishna is God, my duty is to serve him, then anything that you're trying to see in relationship to Krishna automatically becomes perfect. So then one doesn't have to worry about that. So that's the point. If that's emphasized, then devotees see it like that. Even though technically they don't know the mechanics how that's working, it'll still work out fine. Right? Because they're doing it for Krishna. Does that make sense? That's what's so nice about the system. It doesn't have to be very complicated. It only needs to be as complicated as you're complicated. Right? All the areas your mind goes into, those are all the areas you have to deal with. Your mind doesn't go into that area, don't worry about it. You know, unless it's something like cleanliness. But does that make sense? Yeah. So it's basically is that what you are conscious of, those are the areas that you deal with. That's the prominent. But there are areas that one's not conscious of, like the soul, God, others, you know, like that. Does that make sense? No? Yes? Yeah. I mean, it was simple until they bumped into the others, right? And then it became very difficult. Okay, footnote 5. Even if one masters the logical techniques of reasoning and applies them in his life, he can be liberated only by the mercy of the Lord. Right? So that's one thing that they're leaving out. This is the difficulty. Is that they go through all this, but still Krishna's Mukunda. So they do recognize God, and that he's, you know, there. He's right. But it's not the prominent element. In the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 11.237, it is stated, according to Srila Sridhar Swami, the objection may be raised that since fear is caused by ignorance, it can be dispelled by knowledge and there's no need to worship the Supreme Lord. The living entity falsely identifies with his material body, family, society, and so on. And he simply has to give up this false identification. Then, what will Maya be able to do? In reply to this argument, Srila Sridhar Swami has quoted the following verse from Bhagavad Gita 7.14. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Very difficult to overcome, he's just being nice, means you can't get over it. But those who have surrendered to me, then they can easily cross beyond it. The living entity called Jiva Tattva is one of the potencies of the Supreme Lord. But the constitutional position of the living entity is tatastha, or marginal, being minute, right? Tata is the bank, right? So that's the thing. Bank, like on the river, like that. Because it's not land and it's not water. So the bank, that's the jiva. So that's tatastha. Being minute, every living entity is eternally dependent upon the supreme living entity, Krishna. This is confirmed in the Vedic literature as follows. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yo vidhati kaman. Among all the eternally conscious beings, there is one supreme eternal living being who is supplying the needs of all the innumerable others. Katha Upanishad 2.1.12. Krishna's Kaviraj has stated, Ekale Ishwara Krishna Arasabhritya. Krishna is the only independent controller. All other living entities depend upon him. Sisi Adi 5.142. The potency of the Lord that enlightens us in the Lord's service is called Chit Shakti. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments that when the living entity develops a spirit of independence, he is forced to come to the material world, where he enters into various types of petty and undesirable behavior that create a fearful situation for him. The Bahiranga Shakti, the illusory potency of the Supreme Lord, covers all trace of the Chit Shakti and imposes one material body after another upon the living entity for his gross sinful enjoyment. I was thinking gross sinful losses. It just didn't quite. Yeah, it's more real, but it's not. As further punishment, the living entity who has given up his loving relationship with Krishna loses all power to perceive the eternal blissful form of the Supreme Lord, who is his actual shelter. Because that's what one's given up, is that in the spiritual world, everything's connected to the Lord. So you've given up that connection to the Lord and just looking at the spiritual world on how can I enjoy this, right? So that element of, in other words, enjoying the Lord's energy separate from the Lord. So because the energy being conscious is not going to allow that, then one ends up with the unconscious reflection. That's what one deals with, right? So because one has left the Lord out of it, that's why then one is unable to remember the Lord, so one's covered. Is that right? Right. So it's just a natural consequence of one's position that one has taken. Right? One gives that understands that. Then one understands that seeing everything in connection to Krishna, that is the natural consciousness of those in the spiritual world. So if you have that, then you become qualified to be in the spiritual world. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what one's trying to do. So all these things that are recommended will feel that, you know, there's difficulty in this and that because we're so used to not being conscious of Krishna. The Bahiranga. Oh, okay. As further punishment, the living entity who has given up his loving relationship with Krishna loses all power to perceive the eternal blissful form of the Supreme Lord, who is his actual shelter. Instead, the living entity becomes attracted to many temporary phantasmagorical forms, such as his personal body, the bodies of his family members and friends, his nation, his city, with its buildings and cars, and innumerable types of ephemeral material scenery. In such a state of gross ignorance, the idea of returning to one's original identity no longer even crosses the mind. Because what does one see? I mean, why wouldn't that? Why with phantasmagorical forms? What is the? Because you're not worried about the temporariness. So what's the phantasmagorian? Yes. That here are all so many options to enjoy. You know what I'm saying? Cooped up in the house, you want to get out, walk down, you know, to Times Square, you know, a big smile comes here. Why?
Lots of opportunities.
So many opportunities. Right? so many places, directions you can go, things, this, that. So that's the idea. But if you put Krishna as a center, each one of those things, then Krishna would be the center of that. So then how that would be used for Krishna. And then it's not so much opportunities. Well, it's not opportunities for enjoyment, it's opportunities for serving Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So if one sees like that, it's always opportunities for serving Krishna. Then one can deal with the spiritual nature, which is so much more, so much more happening. You know, like that. The other one looks like it's a lot happening, but if it's so much happening, why do they just only pan by it for about 1 second? You know what I'm saying? You'd be able to stay there eternally, but no, people get bored. So. That makes sense. Most people you see are walking by. They're not only the cameraman is standing there looking at it. You know, everybody else, or the tourists also. Right. So that's why one's original identity, because he's serving a Krishna, that doesn't cross the mind. It is important to make clear that bhayam, or fear, cannot ultimately be vanquished simply by impersonal self-realization, as expressed by the words Aham Brahmasmi, I'm spirit soul. Because that was the one point that came up, is that if you get rid of fear, then you can get rid of, you can be liberated. But the actual point is the fear is actually fear of one's relationship with the Lord, that he's the controller and enjoyer, and I'm not. That's why people are reluctant to actually hear about God, you know, or to hear philosophy. Because what's philosophy telling you? Right? We're not God. God is God. Right? So that's the difficulty.
It is why it is so important to hear about God.
Yes. So, but in the association of those who have that faith.
Yes.
Right? Because otherwise you have the Bhagavad Saptas and all these different things. So many people talking on Vedas all over the world. But because it's not meant for pure devotion, therefore no pure devotion is actually evoked. So people just go on in their materialistic way of life. They feel, you know, a little more religious, so they're happy that way. But yes.
Maharaj, the conditioned soul is used to feeling that if they give to another, then they lose out. So that's the conditioned nature. But if we give to God, then we'll lose out.
No, but even that is someone more pious understands that you give, you get back. But then that's the whole point, is then they see it from that angle. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean, in other words, what's the importance of giving?
Pleasing the person.
But ultimate, why by giving is that pleasing to the other person? Where does that principle come from?
Charity.
Okay, but charity is the thing, and it's giving something to somebody. It means you already said it previously when you opened your statement. You know what I'm saying? See, this is what happens. Much of the time is when you're discussing, you're actually saying, you know, the actual point, but you don't know that it's the point.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? That sometimes comes up, you know, sometimes in the papers, writing on things, but you'll use something that's actually the essential point as some side point. So you already said the essential point. Ben? Don't remember. Said about giving to Krishna. Right? Giving in charity, so making Krishna center of that, you're giving to Krishna. So the point is the living entity. In other words, if you look at it getting more personal. Charity means you're sharing something. I have money, I share this with you. Right? It's just more formal. It's less intimate. But the principle is you're sharing. Right? So the idea is you're sharing whatever situation, whatever experience, whatever desire, whatever interest is there with Krishna. That's what devotional service is. Does that make sense? So that's why charity is important. Because then it books it one step closer to everything's not about me and for me. Okay, I may think it's all about me, but I should share, you know, this all about me with everybody else. Right? That doesn't mean you write an autobiography and stuff like that. Just to share. You know, if it's interesting, maybe they'll buy it, but otherwise. Does that make sense? Right. So that's the one thing. Then the next element comes up is that, okay, now the quality of this, right, if you're supposed to share something, okay, but what's the quality of that sharing? Right? The principle is it should be not for yourself, right? So it has to be selfless sharing. So practicing of selflessness, that comes in sacrifice. Does that make sense? And now, what's the medium through which you'll share? Right? That's according to what your nature is. So that's your duties. So that creates austerity. Right? So the whole point of austerity, charity, and sacrifice, right, that Gita is recommending, is that you're trying to get at the point that of everything you do is always in connection with the Lord. So what are your duties? You're, in a selfless way, you know, sharing them with Krishna. Right? For his pleasure. So that's where the devotion comes in. So these are the natural techniques or manifestations of the devotion. Does that make sense? Okay. It's important to make clear that in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.12, Narad Muni says to Vyasadeva, oh, it is. Somehow or another, I started off to think it was English, and I was going to say mir. Then I thought, no, it's Sanskrit. So I was going to say mere, nice karma. Then I was thinking, then I saw, no, actually it is English. And now I'm looking at it, it is Sanskrit. And then it's got the, you know, so it's like, kept...
So if you put it in italics, it's Sanskrit.
It makes it easier, yeah. Then, yeah.
I think it is English, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's the thing, is that mere naish karma, because nowadays people don't use mere, you know, so much. So it's
in Hindi that means my.
Huh? Mere naish karma. My naish karma. It's naish karma, but it's my naish karma. That would be like the ultimate, you know, contradictory statement. Mere naishkarmyam, or cessation of material activities and repudiation of the bodily conception of life, cannot ultimately save one. Right? Narad Muni is saying to Vyasadeva. Because otherwise, then the Mahabharata is showing the element of naishkarmya, performance of duties, you know, all this charity, austerity, sacrifice. But the point is just doing that, that's not going to actually save one. It's doing that to please the Lord, that will save one. Because the other may give nice facilities, you save yourself from a difficult or uncomfortable situation that creates a nice situation, or it gets you out of the material world so that there is no situation at all. You know, it's just it's just your lacking situation. So then these people are always, they're talking about a bad situation, so why would no situation be better? Right? I mean, you go from a bad situation to a better situation. Why would the option be no situation? Right? You know, it's not logical. Okay, so that can't save you. It's merely doing that. It doesn't mean you're not doing that. It means just by doing that. No, it's that along with. It's just like cooking lunch is not going to please Krishna. It's cooking lunch, you know, that you want to offer him in devotion. That will please Krishna. You know? So that's the point of using this mirror.
So to get back to the
Get back to the?
Yeah.
Oh. So not back to my Narsh Karmya.
So the whole idea is correct, just daily by Krishna. So if they just add Krishna?
If they added Krishna, then their system would... But if they added Krishna, then you kind of reorganize some of the things, and then the Prameyas would look like the... You know, and Pramans would look like Dasamul. Because all it is they're taking the Vaishnava philosophy and only looking at it from the angle of getting to liberation and using the element of logic and reasoning, of knowledge, which is a major part. We'll say by having Sambandha Gyan, that's how you're going to actually advance nicely, because with having the proper knowledge, then you'll actually know how to endeavor. But if I know that all endeavor is only useful if it's in connection with Krishna in devotion, then I'll make the endeavor to do everything in connection with Krishna in devotion. It's not that the knowledge itself is what's going to do. The knowledge is what's going to evoke the natural position, right? Because we mentioned before is that it's not by performing the ritual that you develop bhakti. These are the activities that evoke the natural devotion, you know, in the soul. You know what I'm saying?
So more or less, all the philosophies that we understand are the same?
They're all the same, yeah. Because everything's the same. Even anyone has a mundane philosophy, it's still the same. It's only taking, but they just get smaller and smaller, you know, which aspect that they're taking of philosophy, where it's, you know, becomes very... Right? But these are very big, so they're major areas like that.
Those major areas seem not to be so practical in Kali Yuga, where people don't have that much brain. So the philosophy would be much more...
Can we quote you on this?
Isn't it?
It's amazing how when it comes to this, oh, we don't have so much brain, so then do like this. No, no, we can have so much brain. We have a plan.
But when you dig deeper inside, then you understand how much brain you don't have.
Yeah, it means before reading this section on Yaya, we might have thought we were really smart, right? Yeah. And then after reading this, and you understand this, wow. You know, they get down to even on how you're using the thing. Is it using it in the positive or in the negative, or, you know, this and that? So it's like,
yeah.
And this is how they just used to sit around and think.
Just the footnote by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, the previous one about the punishment.
Mm.
And you read and you don't understand, you know it's Bhakti
Siddhanta. But what was fun is I was thinking that some of that was easier to understand than, you know, how it was written in the text here. Like that. So.
But when you read Bhagavatam, it's
like
just,
you know, yeah. Yeah. Because it's already done all that. Means you've already come to all the conclusion of all that, so then they just present Krishna. But then you can technically, if you explain what's going on here, then all those fancy words would be necessary. Okay. The living entity must find a superior shelter on the spiritual platform, otherwise you will come back to the fearful situation of material existence. That is stated in Shastra. Although one may, with great labor and effort, struggle up to the Brahman platform, if he does not find a suitable shelter, he will come back to the material platform. His so-called liberation is vimukta mana, liberation by imagination. Right? You're not exactly, you know what I'm saying? You know, you're in the POW camp, and you break out of the POW camp into this huge open field like that. So you can have that feeling of freedom. But, you know, there is every chance that the guy sitting in the little tower up there, yeah, shoots you or sends somebody out to collect you and bring you back. And so that's the thing. It's liberation by imagination. You're not exactly liberated. Okay. Yes, so in other words, they're taking the analytical aspect of this Shravana Marana Natnidhi Vyasana aspect of the life, and how to do that in the very exacting way that you know what you're dealing with is actually real. Right? So for us is that we don't individually, that's not as important because the acharyas have already given. We need have to have the faith in it and understand what's going on. We don't have to ourselves go through it, but it means where we're applying it into our life, then it's always useful. But it's not that if we don't have this technique that we're able to practice very comfortably, then we won't be able to advance. No, because that's why it's mentioned about the Bhagavatam, the ripened fruit. There's no skin, there's no seed. All you have to do is just taste it. Right? You know, a mango, if I give you a mango, you can't just taste it. You know, you have to do something with it to be able to. But in here, it's all. There's nothing you have to do, just taste. Is that the sense? So that's the that's the idea. So this is where there's a problem, then it's used to a great advantage. Right? But there's some obstacle that the mind is giving tricks on. So by this, you can go through it and understand it's not real. The mind's just tricking. Right? But even if that one doesn't follow that, one has faith that I'm supposed to be serving Krishna and was following the order of authority and doing that, then one can attain all perfection. So that's the nice thing about it. Right? The difficulty is, oh, we don't worry about those. No, then it means the one who doesn't worry about it doesn't mention we don't worry about it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? The atheist is always talking there's no God, but someone who actually, you know, that was, means animals aren't sitting around thinking about God. They're just going on with life. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so in other words, they're always thinking about God and how he doesn't exist. But if it really was important, then why would they even bother? You know? Because, you know, like let's say the guy down at the dock who just does his work and all this and that, and after work goes to the pub and this and that, has a fight, you know what I mean? You know, has to. But so, technically, according to the atheist, he's already your perfected person. Because he just doesn't even think about God. Right? But the atheist is then struggling with trying to come to that perfectional platform. So the problem is he has the wrong association. Right? He doesn't have, you know, he's hanging out with the wrong crew.
It means that the animal are more logic than the artistic.
Well, I mean, they're kind of like the perfection of what the atheist is talking about. You know? Like that. You know, because they don't worry about God at all. They just, you know, what's right in, what's right in front of you? You means I'm looking at something. You can eat it. You can sleep. You can mate. You can defend. These are the options. So does it? Can I do any of those with that? If not, then I move to the next object. And I didn't. No, like this one, like that. Is that? No. According to the latter Nyaya Vaisheshika scholars, the soul can attain true knowledge of realities and through it liberation only by the grace of God. So the Nyaya Vaisheshika. Nyaya seems to be, because he says the latter, so it appears that the Nyaya on its own then is not putting so much element on this grace of God. It's more like you do the thing. It means God will be carrying it out. Because as it is, it's his potency that holds everything together. It's his potency. He is the knowledge. He is everything. He's the power and the word. So, and the word was God. Right? So then, I wonder if they understand what they've said. You know? So then but the element that there's the grace of God, that doesn't seem to come out so much, but it seems the Nyaya Vaisheshika scholars, they bring that element out. Yes.
Couldn't you use that argument in reverse, the one about not being preoccupied with God as an atheist? You could say the theist. If he was really so convinced about his position, why is he so obsessed with disproving, you know, atheism or establishing God? Why doesn't he just go along with his God?
Because he does. He would. As we see, he's the Vaishnav Das and you know, Paramahamsa, Babaji, and they would. It's that people with other ideas come in and bring those up. That's why then it's there. Mm-hmm. That would be the one thing. The other is that because they're so obsessed with not being obsessed, therefore they're suffering. So then by explaining to them how by dealing in this way or that way, then you won't, then everybody will actually be happy. So it's more of a welfare work. Is that will benefit the others. That's how they'll be uplifted. That's how they'll be able to actually appreciate and understand. Mm-hmm. Is that okay?
Yeah.
The point is much of what's being said, it's all the same thing. You say, well, it doesn't matter if it's this way or that way. But who said it doesn't matter? You know what I'm saying? You know, technically the point is let's say you want to get the pancake, the butter, and the jam into your stomach, right? That's kind of the thing. So generally you put down the pancake, then the butter, then the jam. But you could put down the jam, then the butter, then the pancake. Or the butter, the pancake, that would be even better, right? The butter, the jam, then the pancake. Right? You could.
You could take the pancake out, just the butter and the jam.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Like that. I mean, the kids would be happy with that one. Then it saves you having to cook, right? Anything. Here's the butter. Here's the bottom of the jam. Like, he means just have to make sure that they can open it. You know, like that.
Jim and traveling Sankirtan prasadam was dates dipped in butter.
Dates in butter. We went more for. I think America was more the stick of butter and sugar. Just put it in there and take a bite. I think that was after the planters, peanuts, and the block of cream cheese. So that would have been dessert. Now, notice there's no water involved in all this. I don't know how they digested anything. But. And somehow or another, the Indian food gets the bad name. Okay, so there's by the grace of God, therefore it's a higher position. The Vaisheshika Naiva is a higher position. That will come up later. But it's still, it's just because it's by the grace of God doesn't mean that afterwards there's a relationship with God. You know, it's just like, let's say, you go down to the office and the guy, you filled out the forms, he stamps your paper. It's just automatic. But then if there's a case where he doesn't necessarily have to, he has to be happy with the whole thing, then you're acknowledging that he had been pleased, therefore he gave you the stamp. You know, which is, you know, more of a element. But prayojana. That's strange. We just looked at it and it said 10 after. It's time to. Okay, we should end, otherwise the kids come along and then we're still here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
yes.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
yes.
Jainatai Gaurapena ki. Yes.